Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. I am so excited to welcome a neuroscientist and former psychotherapist, Ariel Garten, to the podcast, who witnessed firsthand the struggles many face with mental health and the search for effective, accessible solutions. Inspired to make a real difference, she channeled her expertise into co-founding Muse, a health tech startup aimed at revolutionizing brain health through technology. Muse, the brain-sensing EEG headband, has helped over 500,000 users globally improve their meditation, reduce stress, and enhance sleep quality. But we're going to talk about so much more than that, including pain, anywhere from fibromyalgia, chronic pain, body awareness, performance optimization, so much in this episode. By providing real-time biofeedback on brain activity, heart rate, and body movements, Muse supports personal brain training and offers valuable insights for both consumers and neuroscience researchers. Trusted by medical providers and featured in over 200 third-party studies, Muse is on the path to unlocking the brain and revolutionizing health. Ariel and Muse have been featured in thousands of articles, including major media outlets, and driven by a deep passion for understanding the human mind, Ariel is committed to empowering individuals to enhance their mental capacities. Through Muse, she provides innovative tools, insights to motivate people to actively engage in their wellness journeys, inspiring them to achieve their full potential. Ariel is a sought-after speaker in the global stage, and I'm so honored to have her on the podcast today. Now, let me tell you, if you are super interested in this, they actually gave us a discount code for our listeners. So before we even dive in, if you are interested to take a look and understand more about the product, go to choosemuse.com/optimal, and you get a 15% discount on Muse. This is huge. So it's choosemuse.com/optimal. Of course, we're going to have that linked up in the show notes as well, but you got it. Take a listen and see how this is changing the game.
Ariel, thank you so much for being with us today. We love having people on who talk about the brain because we know how important the brain is. We talk about it all the time when it comes to movement, pain, our perception of everything that's going on around us. So thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Hello, everyone.
Now, we are not neuroscientists. So it's so exciting to have, you know, a neuroscientist on that can better it. So we could better understand the brain activity, what this all means, brain health, and how this really impacts our recovery, our sleep, our pain, you know, so much within our bodies when we understand better what's happening up here. So first of all, I want to understand what drew you to neuroscience? Like, why become a neuroscientist? What were you hoping to achieve?
Well, I was always fascinated by how the brain worked and how we worked. I wanted to know why it was that we perceived color, why it was that we could think, that we could feel. You know, it was so amazing to me that there's this organ in your head, your brain, that generates your entire experience of life. And so I wanted to really understand how it all worked. And then as I got older, I recognized it was not just about how does the thing work, but how can we actually use this knowledge to help us live better, happier, healthy lives. And so I became not just a neuroscientist, but, you know, applied what I'd learned into the creation of tools and techniques to help people improve their life by improving their brain.
It's so crazy when you put it that way, that there's this organ in our head that is responsible for the perception of everything in life.
Everything. And
it's you can't overstate how important the brain is to our experience, because it truly is our experience. For listeners new to this topic, and I mean, people talk about brain waves, mm-hmm. and how important, and how we're starting to measure these brain waves and what's going on with our brain wave activity. And I feel like for the average person listening, it's like, okay, brain waves, great. What does that mean? What are we talking about when we're talking about brain waves?
Sure. So inside of our head, we have our brain. Inside of our brain, we have the cells of our brain, which are called neurons. And those neurons communicate with one another electrochemically. So our neurons are always sending little electrical messages back and forth, and that's how they communicate. Now, the sum total of that electrical communication can actually be read on the surface of our head, and they can be read as our brain waves. So when you hear the term brainwave, what it's referring to is the ability to actually measure the electrical activity of the brain from the surface of our head.
Taking a quick pause from the action to talk about Needed and how it has helped Jen and myself stay on the top of our nutrition game, making sure we're getting in all the nutrients that our bodies need. Needed was vital in helping provide nutrients to Jen and myself when we were trying to conceive, during Jen's prenatal period, and in postpartum. And we love Needed because they formulate their supplements by testing thousands of women's nutrient levels to know what's truly needed to thrive, not just survive. You won't find unnecessary fillers, poor nutrient forms, or unsustainably sourced ingredients, or high heavy metal loads, and nutrients that are better taken separately, like taking your omega-3s and iron separately. One of the things that I love about Needed is it's not just for pregnancy and postpartum. They have supplements for everyone. Lately, we've loved taking their creatine and their omega-3s to make sure that we're getting everything that our bodies need. So if you're interested in leveling up your nutrition game, head over to thisisneeded.com and use code OPTIMAL for 20% off your first order. That's thisisneeded.com and use code OPTIMAL for 20% off your first order. All right, let's get back into it.
And so what is that really helping us to understand within our bodies when we understand these brain waves, and how does that change what's happening and what we are experiencing?
So from the surface of the head, we can read brain waves that give us an indication of the state the brain is in. So you've probably all heard of alpha brain waves, beta brain waves. Well, these brain waves relate to the state of the brain. So when you're in deep sleep, for example, you have a lot of delta wave activity, the slowest brain waves. When you are in a calm, relaxed, focused state, you have alpha activity. When you're thinking and cogitating, you have beta activity. When you're anxious and thinking really quickly and, you know, your brain is racing, you have an increase in high beta activity. So the state that our brain is in can be indicated by our brain waves.
And so how does that change, or in somebody who, say, is feeling anxious or depressed or dealing with, you know, symptoms you might call psychosocial or mental type symptoms of depression, anxiety, like what is happening with someone's brainwaves in those cases?
So in the case of depression, for example, what we actually see is a shift in the left and right brainwave activity. Of course, everybody's brain is different and everyone's brain is different, but you can see overall changes. So one of the markers of depression is a change in a metric called your ERPs, your event-related potentials. You can often see a shift in the amount of brainwave activity in the left and right prefrontal cortex. And in somebody with anxiety, you can tend to see a preponderance, like a whole lot of very high beta activity. Now, every part of our brain is doing something a little bit different at every moment. So you can have, you know, high theta activity from your thalamic cortex. You can have all sorts of different kinds of brain activity, but what we're looking at is the general overall sum total. Where in the brain it's coming from is also important. So alpha activity comes predominantly in the back of our head. When we close our eyes, you get an alpha block. So our occipital cortex is a strong generator of alpha activity. So where you place your EEG sensors on your head also determines the kind of brainwave activity that you'll be reading in those regions.
And why do we want to, you know, are there certain brainwaves that we want to start to activate different times of day, or depending on what we want to feel and how we want to shift our state? Like, is that possible to tap into different brainwaves?
Yeah. So the cool thing about brainwaves is not only is it something that we can read to get a sense of the brain's general activity, but we can also influence. So in meditation, for example, when somebody closes their eyes and breathes deeply and goes into a meditative state, we tend to see an increase overall in alpha activity. And that means that more of your brain is coordinated in a beautiful alpha wave at that moment. In deep sleep, we're supposed to have delta activity in deep sleep, but a lot of people get very poor deep sleep. And actually, as you age, the amount of delta in the height of your delta waves, the amplitude or the power of your delta waves while you sleep, decreases. Mm-hmm. And so you can do things like boost slow wave activity by introducing sound stimulus during sleep to enhance deep sleep by enhancing delta waves. So one of the things that we do with Muse is we create experiences that help you understand your brainwave activity and then train your brainwaves to do things like enhance deep sleep, to improve your meditation abilities, to help you focus and self-regulate more effectively, and improve your general brain health.
So what is Muse? Because now you brought up Muse. So can we understand what this is and how this is kind of helping?
Sure. So Muse is a device that is a slim little wearable that tracks your brain activity and gives you real-time feedback on your brain so that you can track it, you can train it, and then you can transform your life. So mm-hmm. Muse has a range of brain health tools that help you focus your attention, that can help you meditate, that it's able to track and improve your sleep. And overall, as I've mentioned, improve both your knowledge of your own brain and actually work on doing the things that in the long term help you improve your brain health.
So you bring up meditation a few times now. Is this a powerful tool that people should be looking to tap into, especially those that feel like something might be going on here, whether I'm struggling with sleep or I'm always feeling anxious, you know, during certain periods of the day? What is it that makes meditation a powerful tool to help really regulate things?
Meditation is an incredibly powerful tool because it helps you both observe yourself, so you can observe your body, your brain, and your thoughts, and then it helps you make better choices with that information you have. And that might seem weird because most people think about meditation as just like sitting there and doing nothing. But in that process of quote unquote sitting there and doing nothing, what you're really doing is you're observing your breath, you're observing your thoughts, and then you are making decisions moment by moment that say, hey, I can slow my breath. I can stay here with my breath in this moment. I don't need to get caught up in my thoughts. Or when you're observing your thoughts, you can say like, hey, I'm having a thought about being anxious about an upcoming interview or the fight I had with my boyfriend. I don't need to be with these thoughts right now. I can move my attention away and onto something else. So it really lets you manage the contents of your own mind. It really lets you learn the patterns of your thinking and make better choices about it.
And how often, how many minutes a day does someone need to, or what's optimal for meditation, in order to start to really see and feel the benefits?
So there's no best time or best amount of time to meditate. But in the studies, typically 20 minutes of meditation per day is what's been documented. In the studies done with Muse, and there are many, many, many of them, you start as little as 3 minutes a day. So there was a study that was done by the Mayo Clinic with breast cancer patients awaiting surgery. They used Muse for a minimum of 3 minutes a day, and they were able to see an improvement in their stress and their fatigue and overall quality of life improvements in the cancer care process. So there was another study with Mayo Clinic physicians using Muse throughout the day to manage their stress, and they used it an average of 5 minutes a day, so like super busy clinicians. And with just 5 minutes a day, they were able to see improvements in their resilience, a 54% decrease in their burnout, and improvements in their cognition and sleep. So, you know, optimal meditation traditionally has been much longer, but we don't have tons of time in our day. So even just a 3, 5, 10 minute practice can make a significant improvement in your life. But the key is that you have to do it regularly. So just like you go to the gym to maintain your strength, just like you eat good food every single day, not just once, you know, not just once a year, not just once a week. when you do this thing regularly, in small measurable doses, you can see real sustained improvement.
Well, and that's what we see with exercise. You know, it's like there's no end date to what you should be doing for movement or exercise. Like, why would that be any different for our brain health? And for us clinicians, it makes sense because anything in the body tends to shift when you are doing something consistently. Our physiology changes over time, where yeah, it might become more resilient, but if you suddenly remove that brain exercise being your meditation, you will find your brain will find a different resting point if you suddenly remove that. And so I went to school for my physical therapy degree at Mayo Clinic. And if there are Mayo Clinic clinicians that are able to find 5 minutes throughout their day to do meditation, because I worked with some, they are some of the busiest people that I have ever experienced or interacted with in my life. So if they're finding 5 minutes to do it, I think that there, you know, is time in the day for even people like us who are
busy parents,
busy parents and entrepreneurs. But
it was really great. So the Mayo Clinic has done quite a number of studies with ease. They've used it for long COVID, for fibromyalgia, for Cushing syndrome. And then they said, hey, we're seeing all this benefit with our patients. Why don't we try it with the doctors? And they went to the doctors and just gave it as an optional. It was at the end of the pandemic in the emergency room. So like as busy gets. They had about 50 clinicians sign up to voluntarily do it. And they all found at least 5 minutes in their day. And what was interesting was the Mayo Clinic did all the study and the analysis. And so they looked at the benefit, and people didn't necessarily get a benefit from doing it more. The benefit came from doing it consistently. And the doctors voluntarily found this time and thus saw like a significant increase. And so it's something that Mayo Clinic continues to use to this day.
That's absolutely incredible. And I want to ask too, like, how does wearing Muse impact just doing the meditation alone? Like, how is it training the brain? How is it changing things?
Are they getting some sort of feedback on a device that allows almost helps guide what they're doing?
Exactly. So you're getting real-time audio feedback on your brain activity while you meditate. So, you know, most people, when you sit down to meditate, you're like, all right, I'm meditating. What am I supposed to be doing now? And there's no little coach or guru in your head. There's nobody telling you if you're doing it right or wrong or what you're supposed to be doing. So Muse solves that problem by tracking your brain activity while you meditate and then translating your meditation into guiding sounds. So when you're focused on your breath, you hear it as calm and quiet sounds. And as your mind wanders off onto a thought, which all our minds do, you hear it as the sound of the rain or the weather picking up. So, you know, it gets loud and stormy when you wander onto thoughts, and it gets calm and quiet when you bring your attention on your breath. So this really intuitively teaches you what you're supposed to do and then reinforces your brain, you know, gives you the conditioning that you need to reinforce your brain to say, yep, this is the right state. You found it. You're here. Stay here. This is a good thing. And when you do that, you're able to learn to meditate much faster, and you're really able to learn what the state is and maintain the state even when you're not using the device. So once you find it there, then you can find it on your own time after time throughout the day when you need it.
So you mentioned that one of the studies done was done with people who have fibromyalgia. And I know that this can be one of the most frustrating and debilitating diagnoses out there, because it's kind of this a nondescript pain that people are just feeling throughout their whole body. So how or what did you see in the study when Muse was used with those patients, and how does it really impact those pain patterns? Because especially with fibromyalgia, that's like really ingrained stuff in our neurologic system.
Yeah. So we actually have a course inside of Muse called Transforming Pain. It's not available to consumers, although the rest of the Muse app is. It's just available through clinicians. And it teaches you about pain, so the psychoeducation of pain. Pain has two aspects to it: the primary pain, the actual pain, the sensation itself, and then the secondary pain, all of the thoughts that we have around our pain. And so when you learn to differentiate between the primary pain and the secondary pain, all of the thoughts, the worries, the anxiety, the emotion that comes around it, and you learn to soothe yourself and move your attention away from that secondary pain, from all of those thoughts and feelings, it really has a positive impact in your ability to live with that pain and to transform the way that you see your pain, you feel your pain, and you exist in your body. So the fibromyalgia study hasn't been published, but they've told me the results look really, really good. In the long COVID study, which is a lot of some relationships to fibromyalgia, in the long COVID study, they saw a significant improvement, decrease in brain fog, decrease in symptomology, including in the pain dimension. And so, you know, what people are discovering is that, yes, pain exists, pain sucks, but you can shift your mindset around it. You can shift the way your brain attends to it. You can shift the attention that you pay to it, the thoughts that you have around it. And once you start to shift those things and also simultaneously manage the stress and manage your cortisol load, which meditation also helps you do, then you can live in a much easier place in your own body and in your life.
I mean, preaching. You're preaching to the choir here in everything that we, you know, kind of discuss and talk about. And it's amazing to be able to have a tool now for people to help guide themselves in understanding how that, you know, how that can improve in their body. And I know as well, you know, you talk about brain activity, improving body awareness. How does understanding your brain activity and tapping into this improve body awareness?
That's a fantastic question. So it's interesting. I had a bunch of symptoms in my life that arose not necessarily from real tangible problems. I had a concussion and then I had a lot of post-concussive sequelae. So I had dizziness, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, all of which persisted in the absence of any real damage. You know, at that point, I had no actual damage to my brain or body, but I continued to have these symptoms. And the way that I dealt with that is by dealing on the level of the thoughts and the feelings and the fear that was arising. So my body had generated a response where sound would be scary to me. And anytime I heard a really loud, quick sound or like super loud music, it would generate a real sensation of pain, like inside my head and in my ears. And it would then create confusion in me and like feel like concussive like symptoms over again. All of which, while I had a perfectly well-functioning ear with like no damage there. And the reason that these symptoms were created was because there was a pain loop and a fear loop that had been created because I had something scary happen to me. My limbic system, the part of my brain that contains my amygdala that's always looking for danger, my limbic system became primed for any fearful response. And then it created a protective, quote unquote, it thought it was protecting me, protective response that was saying, oh no, that sound is scary. You know, that's something loud. It might hurt you or hit you. And created all of the symptoms as if I had been hurt, but nothing really happened to me over and over and over again. And so other people have these experiences with chronic pain where a chronic pain loop is set up. These can be experiences with light sensitivity or dizziness. There can be other people have them with sensitivities to foods or environmental measures where there's no actual threat, but our brain misinterprets what's around as threatening and then produces a inflammatory or protective response. And the response itself is generating a whole lot of irritation, but we ascribe that irritation to the thing in the environment, the food, the smell, the sound. But the actual irritation is generated inside of ourselves as an attempt to protect ourselves or, you know, keep us away from that thing that is actually safe but could be harmful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's this real association between the brain and the symptoms that it can create and our mind-body's ability to heal itself by overcoming the fear in those situations. So for me, I did a lot of behavioral therapy. I did a ton of meditation, a lot of retraining my mind and body and my physiology and my fear response, you know, retraining that sound was safe. I literally would listen to a metronome regularly, and at first it would drive me crazy. And I'd be like, you know, deep breaths, you know, focus on my breath, you know, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe. And I was able to retrain my relationship to these things for my body mind to know I was safe in the world again. So all to say, our brain has a ton to do with how we interact with pain, how we interact with our body and what we think might be right or wrong with it, and that you can retrain those relationships in order to live more freely.
It's ironic how our brain can kind of have a mind of its own, to be a little bit punny, in situations like that, where we talk about it all the time when it comes to pain, is it's a protective system. And even when we know consciously that that nothing's dangerous, our brain is like, nope, that's dangerous. Here's some pain. I'm going to try to drive you away from that. But I had a similar-ish situation when I was going through school. I got in a very bad car accident, traumatic car accident. And I played football in college as well, but had a very bad head hit during the car accident that I was having post-concussive symptoms. And I, meanwhile, I was working in an outpatient rehab clinic for patients who had spinal cord injuries and head injuries because of car accidents. And I was having all sorts of night terrors and panic attacks and memory issues. I couldn't remember my patients' names that I had been working with for 6 to 8 weeks. And yeah, I found it a little bit different of a way, but I started doing breath work, which is kind of my parallel to meditation, which in your example, and journaling and some other exercises that I would do. And all of my symptoms just went away. And I was like, I got lucky in a way that I stumbled upon the right thing, but it's really incredible how powerful a little bit of that retraining. Meditation or retraining, if you find that time every day to do it, the consistency can be so powerful in ways that people won't believe until they experience it. So in a similar sense, how can we talk about performance optimization? So it's like, okay, if doing meditation can help our mind-body awareness, how can this help somebody
move better?
Or if they're training for something, training for a competition or for a race, you know, how can doing meditation help with their performance?
Sure. So we have a lot of athletes that use Muse, professional football teams that use Muse and got themselves to the Super Bowl repeatedly while using Muse. Professionals, skaters, tennis players. I'm not allowed to name names, but like big names that you've heard who are athletes use Muse and love it. And the ways that they use it are to help themselves multifold. One is as a focused attention training tool. So using the meditation to train your attention, because when you are playing a game of sports, it's really easy to get distracted. You can get distracted by the pain in your body. You can get distracted by the words in your head saying, oh no, this is going to be awful today. You can be distracted by the mood you woke up in, by the audience booing you. And so it really is a mental game. And we've all heard that term. But the mental game means that you need to be able to manage your internal mental state, to notice the thoughts that are coming up, to push aside the ones that aren't helpful to you at this moment, and then be able to manage your physiology, manage your racing heart and the anxiety, or, you know, boost your heart rate up if you're feeling a little turgid and sluggish, and overcome, you know, the state that you are in. So meditation is key to helping you do that. The other way that Muse really helps athletes is through sleep. So we have programs that help you fall asleep and fall back asleep to help you overcome anxiety, a restless sleep, even nightmares. So there's a study done with Muse for Sleep, and it demonstrated a 20% improvement in sleep quality, including a decrease in nightmares and improvements in time falling asleep and time falling back asleep. And so with pro athletes, or even, you know, my own kids as they're doing sports, sleep is incredibly key, as we all know, to help your body both recover and be ready, and to be both physically agile and cognitively agile. Because in sports, you also have to be alert and aware and well-rested so that you have good reaction times when the ball's coming at you, so that you can, you know, see all the things on the field. Your cognitive capability in sport is key.
Now, what is happening when someone isn't getting good quality sleep? Like, what is happening with their brain, and how is Muse, like, what is it doing to help retrain that in order to improve our quality of sleep and reduce that anxiousness?
Yep. So Muse has a beautiful set of programs that help you fall asleep. They're called the Digital Sleeping Pill. So it's actually tracking your brain activity as you move from wakefulness into sleep and adjusting the sounds that you're hearing. So you can choose a sleep story or a soundscape or an audio. And as you listen to it, the Muse is adjusting the audio in such a way that it helps you actually fall asleep. And then if you wear the Muse throughout the night, when you wake up at the night, it helps you fall back asleep. And in technical terms, what it's doing, it's helping you move from wakefulness into N1 sleep. N1 sleep is the first phase of sleep that you're in. Hypnagogia is another term for it. So you're experiencing sort of like trippy feeling of falling asleep. And it helps you transition into N2 sleep, which is light stage sleep. From N2 sleep, you get a bunch of cool brainwave activity called K-complexes that help you insulate from sounds. You get sleep spindles that help your memory consolidation, and those transition you then into stage 3 deep sleep, which is the delta wave sleep. And we have a new feature that has come out called deep sleep stimulation, and it is super awesome. It gives you audio cues during deep sleep that enhance your delta wave activity to help you deepen your deep sleep so that you not only increase the amount of deep sleep that you get, but the depth of deep sleep. And we built this with several research labs in Toronto, Montreal, Spain. And it was originally built as a tool to help older adults with mild cognitive impairment to enhance their deep sleep and their memory consolidation. And we've been able to offer it to everybody through the app.
And are you wearing headphones all throughout the night then? Like, how is that connecting and working?
Yeah, so you're wearing the sleep version of Muse, which is the Muse Athena. And that you wear just a pair of earbuds or headphones, and you're just hearing little audio signals that you don't actually hear. They're sub-audible, but your brain can receive them during the night.
Interesting.
It's only natural that because from what I hear, many people are saying technology and our phones and our TV are ruining our sleep. So it's nice to see that there are technological applications that can help and improve our deep sleep capabilities. So what do things, you know, we're in the area of movement and exercise. What do things like exercise do to our brain activity?
So let me tell you that I worked in a lab where we tried to increase the memory in rats. I know you asked the question about exercise. So this is a very funny segue, because how did we increase the memory and cognitive capabilities of these rats? We put them on a running wheel. Why? Because when you put rats on a running wheel, it increases their neurogenesis, the growth of new neurons. And it increased the neurogenesis in their hippocampus, the part of their brain associated with learning and memory. And it was then my job to look at the sectioned rat brains and to count the number of new neurons that were born as a result of their time on a running wheel. So if anybody ever asks you what can exercise do for your brain, you know, that's just one small example. When we exercise, we increase lots of positive growth factors in our great brain. We increase brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. We increase endorphins. We increase an incredible amount of positive activity and neurotransmitter activity in our brain. And that has really long-lasting effects. We both increase that chemical activity, and we also increase blood flow to our brain. So when we move our bodies, we end up pumping the blood through our system, and that produces more blood flow to the brain, which allows more nutrients to reach the brain and the brain tissue, which allows it to work better. So exercise is key, not just when you're younger to help keep you fit, not just when you're older to keep your muscles sharp, but also to help you stave off age-related illnesses of the brain and to help reduce things like stroke and clogs of not just the arteries of your heart, but the arteries of your brain.
And that's where, you know, I can see something like Muse coming into play, because if you can reduce your pain signals, if you can sleep better, if you can recover better, well, then you're going to be more apt to be able to get that exercise in and be able to move and feel better in your body. So I see a 360 circle of how it's all coming together. Now, is there an optimal time of day? Do we need to do it morning or night? Does it Does it depend on, you know, your goals of what you're trying to achieve? Are you supposed to use Muse before you go to work? Or is it something to help calm down after a long day? Like, are there optimal times to meditate or to use Muse?
So the key thing is that the best time to meditate is the time you'll actually do it. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a morning person, don't try to do it in the morning. You'll just feel sleepy and fall asleep. Choose the time that works for you. Some people love doing it in the morning because then it sets their mentality for the rest of the day. Other people love doing it in the evening when they're home and they get to wind down. Some of us can't do that because we have kids crawling on us, and that's not an optimal time. So it really doesn't matter when it is. It's when it fits in the day for you and when you can do it regularly. So put it in your calendar, schedule the time for it, ideally at the same time every day so it becomes a habit. And, you know, there's lots of great tools and tricks for habit formation. One of them is habit stacking, and that is putting two habits next to one another. So take the habit that you do every day, like brushing your teeth or pouring yourself a cup of coffee, and then stack it. Put your meditation practice right after the thing you do every day, or right before the thing you do every day. So you don't have to meditate before I pour that coffee. And then that will help you generate a consistent, regular habit.
Yes. Love habit stacking.
And speaking of habit stacking, outside of meditation, if there was one thing or one habit that you could say would be beneficial for people to do on a daily basis for brain health or for longevity, what would that habit be?
Exercise. You didn't pay me to say
that.
it really, really is. If there's one other habit that you do every day, it is exercise that increases your heart rate. I mean, that's the number one thing that you can do for longevity and for your brain health. Of course, you know, keep thinking, keep moving, keep talking to people, have great social connections. All that stuff is important. But when we really look at what moves the needle for brain health in the long term, it's moving your body, and moving your body vigorously so your heart rate raises and you get an increase in blood flow to your brain.
That's the thing that I love about exercise. I mean, it's totally the non-sexy answer to every question, because there is such like A-level research in how it benefits almost every system of the body, one type of exercise or another. So again, it's the non-sexy answer, and there is an absolute need for all these tools that can help get people, like Jen said, the 360 circle back to exercise by reducing stress and sleeping better and, you know,
improving
all these
recovery,
improving
all,
the recovery so that we can maybe get back into the exercise that we enjoy.
And I want to know, you know, after so many years of studying the brain and being able to have a tool now to even help deepen that study, what is the one thing that really amazes you, even after all of these years, about understanding brain health?
Yes, that our brains are so phenomenally different. They're different from one another. They're different moment by moment, and that they can really truly be trained and changed. And so when we have a very large, probably the largest database of data anywhere, because we do studies with hundreds and hundreds of researchers who use our tool to look at the brain in different conditions, in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, et cetera. And they use it for wake EEG and sleep EEG. So we've managed to look at a whole lot of EEG. And one of the amazing things is how very, very varied each individual is moment, like day by day. So your brain is different at the beginning of the day than at the end of the day. Your brainwave patterns, your modes of thinking. And so it provides really an amazing opportunity, knowing that we have such both, you know, variability between people, but even variability within ourselves. It means that we can harness that variability and do more of the good stuff and less of the bad stuff, because our brain is able to go there. It's able to go to the good places. It's able to, you know, really, really work for us if we mm-hmm. apply ourselves to shifting how our brain and mind works.
Amazing.
Love that, and love talking brain health and neuroscience. Thank you so much for coming on today. I mean, the two of us could probably nerd out with you for a lot longer, but we won't put the listeners through all of that. If we could just tell them maybe where they can go to learn more from you, or learn more from some of the resources that Muse has, or learn more about Muse and maybe get a product themselves.
Sure. So you can find everything on choosemuse.com, choosemuse.com. And there we have tons and tons of blogs and resources about brain health, meditation, sleep, optimizing all of it. And on all of the socials, you can find me at choosemuse, at choosemuse.
Perfect. We're going to have all of that linked up. And I think we even have a little, we have a link for you guys. I don't remember if there's a discount, but we have a link that we'll like link up for Muse as well.
We'll make sure to have that in the show notes.
Yes, we will. And I just appreciate, you know, continuing to use the science that we know about brain health and being able to really create impact. And the fact that you guys are doing so much study and research to prove how it really helps in all different forms, you know, anywhere from pain to neurodegenerative disorders that happen as we age. And I mean, this can be so hugely impactful. So I applaud the work that you guys are doing and I'm very grateful for it.
Thank you so much. And I'm grateful for the work that you're doing, getting people moving.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another interview with neuroscience Ariel Garten. If you were interested in anything that she said or want to check out Muse or any of her information, we'll have that linked up in the show notes. And please pass this along if you know anyone out there who's struggling with any of the issues that we talked about. Get this episode in their hands. It can be truly beneficial to their overall health. If you haven't, please consider leaving a rating and review in your favorite podcasting platform. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.